Hi, this is Alex. I'm recording the latest episode now. Matt is away this week, so it'll just be me in conversation with our guest. This week I spoke to Belle Beth Cooper, who is one of the co-founders of a company called Hello Code, based in Australia. And they make a piece of software that I use every day and I really enjoy called Exist. But Belle happens also to be a fairly prolific writer on things relating to productivity, skill acquisition, and all of the kind of related topics around that. She's very active online, and you know, barely a week goes by where there's not two or three kind of more articles by her. She also has a really interesting online course on productivity. So we talk about all of these things. Also a lot about kind of freelance work and how to make that viable as a choice. And we talk about kind of learning different kinds of skills that may have nothing to do with mental skills. We talk about her kind of forays into gymnastics and so on as well. So I hope you all enjoy the podcast. And well, here's the audio file.
I guess my background in terms of tech is mostly in marketing, pretty much specifically content marketing. I've probably been doing that for about 5 years or so. And so initially I just kind of bungled my way into it. Mm-hmm. I started blogging about kind of social media marketing when that was just becoming a thing. I thought I was kind of interested in that and I didn't know how that fit with the kind of work I could do. So I just started blogging about my thoughts on that and trends I noticed and that kind of thing and got some freelance writing out of that. And then that turned into doing content marketing as a job for a couple of different startups. And I guess Buffer was kind of the main one that kind of helped me build my career and kind of my personal brand, I suppose, or my personal audience at least, beyond where it was. So I was at Buffer for just under a year, I think. And then I went back to freelancing and mostly I've been freelancing since then, doing content marketing for a bunch of different startups. And then it was just around when I was at Buffer that we started Hello Code. And so that's when Exist first started. So maybe three and a half years ago.
So it's always been kind of tech and productivity. That's always been something you're interested in. I mean, I'm just trying to get the sense of like the fullness of you. Like, is this like a core part?
I think it's something that's evolved over time. I came to it quite late, I suppose. I mean, I was interested in tech when I was in high school. I started learning a little bit of HTML, kind of dabbling with building static websites and that kind of thing. But just other things in life took over and kind of got busy with a bit of traveling. When I was a teenager, I did a year in America as an exchange student.
Yep.
I worked in retail and hospitality and that kind of thing and just didn't really know kind of what direction I was going in. And I kind of got to a point actually when I was working in retail where I realized I wasn't really going anywhere and I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Right.
And just kind of quit and gave up my apartment and went to live on my sister's couch. And
right.
And that's when I started getting interested in social media and thinking, oh, what can I do with this? And started blogging a bit and moved more into freelance writing as part of that. So it's definitely been something that's been kind of a progression. But in terms of my own productivity, I think I've always been drawn to the idea of self-improvement and trying to get more out of my day and trying to learn new things and find time to do interesting things. I'm kind of one of those people that's interested in heaps of stuff and I have a really hard time sticking with one particular thing. So I've always kind of been looking for how can I fit more of these things in and how can I get good at 10 different things at once and that kind of thing. That kind of interest, I think, in my own life has led to the productivity stuff that I write about a lot now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that there's a lot of things that get made, you know, are often just because people had their own kind of personal itch to scratch, and or you know, people learning about stuff like figuring out, you know, how to juggle the responsibilities of life as a freelancer and so on. Like, there are certain, it's a different way of living if you versus, you know, having a a 9-to-5 job or something like that. And yeah, I mean, it seems, and you often write these kind of really interesting, almost kind of lessons learned posts on, you know, a particular period of, I don't know, 3 months or 6 months where you were trying to do a particular thing, and you talk about like the different ways and things you explored. I think that's always really valuable to kind of see how people have approached things. But yeah, it seems that, yeah, for you, this kind of ongoing incremental improvement stuff is important.
Yeah, definitely. And I personally really appreciate that type of perspective as well. I really enjoy reading about other people's experiments and what they've learned about trying things for themselves. So I think I'm kind of naturally drawn to that way of experimenting and then talking about what you learned and adjusting and trying it again. I like to read about it as well as writing in that kind of vein.
Right. Just as to kind of start with one of the things that you've kind of put out into the world recently, you have a productivity course / kind of informational thing that you offer via your own website. Could you talk a little bit about, mm-hmm. I guess, the kind of background behind this, and maybe even some of the kind of the backstory about, which you've written about in a lot of detail, about kind of how you wrote it and why you thought it might be an interesting thing to do?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it kind of came about in a funny way. It was something I'd been thinking about doing for a while in terms of just, I would like to write a course. I write a lot of blog posts, in particular the ones I do for my freelance work, where I'm kind of taking research and trying to understand it and then spit it out in a more understandable way for other people, and kind of trying to teach them what I've learned from reading the research or from trying experiments mm-hmm. myself. And so I thought it would make sense to kind of go from this kind of single, here's a blog post about a particular topic, to bringing a lot of that information I've learned over the time into a course that kind of spits it out in small lessons that all go together in some kind of flow. And so I had this idea I was thinking about, and it was just one of those things where I never had the time to do it. And then, I got fired from my last employee role as a content marketer, kind of out of the blue. I'd been off sick for 2 weeks, and it was a couple of days. It was like the weekend before I was meant to come back to work, and I got a call from my boss that said, don't bother coming back.
Right.
So this was right before Christmas, and I had a big shock because I'd never been fired before and didn't really know what I would do next. One of the things I decided was I had a little bit of runway because they were paying me for the next few weeks. So I had a little bit of time before the pressure was really on that I needed a new job. And I thought, well, while I'm looking for a job, I can't do that 24/7. What else can I do? I thought this is a great time to try doing something interesting, like a project of my own. This course makes sense. Now's a good time to try and do it. But I had also kind of mapped out some other course ideas in the past and even started drafting some of them and gotten nowhere because my motivation would drop so quickly mm-hmm. once the work got really tough, because, of course, it doesn't take long before the fun part of a new project becomes right. really hard work. So because I knew that, I thought the best way to approach this is to try doing a sprint and doing it really quickly, at least for the first draft, so yep. that most of the content is there. So I gave myself 7 days, and it was going to be a 7-day email course. And I thought, I'll give myself 7 days. That'll mm-hmm. be enough time. I'll research other courses and I'll write it. And it started out okay. By the time I got to the end of the 7 days, I realized this needs to be a much bigger course. Yep. There's a lot more here that I need to fit in. It's getting too big. I did a couple of rounds of beta testing. I had people get the emails for free and tell me, what's the course like? Are yep. you implementing? Is it too much? And yeah, it was too much for 7 days, but yep. I didn't want to cut it down. So I ended up expanding it. And so, of course, this 7-day project turned into maybe 2 months by the time I got it launched. But having that initial spurt helped me get a lot of the hardest work out of the way, I think. And
yep.
get over the blank page syndrome and that kind of thing. So it felt like I had enough of it that I was able to push through and get it finished.
Right.
So I'm still glad I did that. And I think if I do another one, I'll definitely do another sprint.
Right.
Although I might give myself a bit more time than 7 days next yeah. time.
Can you describe a little bit kind of what's in it or who would find this useful?
Yeah, definitely. So the course is called Productive Habits. There's also a book version, which has most of the content from the course and a little bit extra. So you can just read it if that's what you'd prefer. You can kind of get both and go through the course. It's an email course, so you get an email every day for a month.
Yep.
And then it's quite handy to have the book if you're the kind of person that likes to go back and reread things as well.
Yep.
So it covers things like we look at procrastination first off and kind of how you can get in your own way and different kind of ways that your brain subconsciously sabotages your work and how you can understand kind of where procrastination comes from and how to get past it. But then after kind of looking at those hurdles that we run into, then the rest of the course focuses on building habits and understanding kind of our own subconscious behavior and how we can take advantage of those things to build habits that will make us more productive, because habits that really stick are the kind of things where you don't have to think about it. You do it without thinking and it becomes part of your routine. And if you can build in those behaviors so that you can be more productive without even thinking about it, you start to get more time in your day and you get more things done. So we look at things like what makes habits stick and the different kind of things that you can do to remind yourself to do your habit every day and to make sure that you won't just do it for 2 days and then stop because it's too hard, and how you can set up your environment and your schedule during the day to make sure that these habits will work for you. And then we also look at some specific examples of things that you might want to do at work that you'd think is a productive habit, and kind of look through almost like a case study of how would you do this, how would you implement this particular habit using the strategies that we've talked about. And then there, at the end, there are a bunch of worksheets to help you review your week and your month, because I'm a big fan of reviews. I think it really helps to reflect on what's worked and what hasn't and keep adjusting. It's part of that's constant self-improvement, I guess. And a worksheet to help you think about your habits when you're setting up a new habit and kind of help you implement a lot of the strategies we talked about, so that you're setting yourself up for success when you start working on building a new habit.
Yeah. I mean, kind of productivity writing often gets a kind of a bad rap. It's you know, it's often lumped in among the kind of self-help glut of the 1990s, or kind of inferior or kind of worthless products being kind of peddled online. And, you know, I'm just imagining people, kind of friends and family and stuff who've said things to me, you know, can't you just do your work? Like, why do you need a special system to do your work? Just to kind of play devil's advocate, I guess, like what things can we learn by thinking about productivity? Like why do we need a special system to work?
I think the reason this is important is because we tend to ignore things like what science tells us about the brain and the subconscious ways that our brain works that we don't notice day to day, things like cognitive biases that affect how we think and we don't even realize it. But also things like we all have a different body clock, and some people work much better in the morning and some people work better at night and some people just work better 9 to 5, and that's fine. Right. But taking advantage of all the specific idiosyncrasies of you and your life and your surroundings, as well as understanding the more general aspects of what science has shown us about how brains work in general and how humans behave and the kind of habits that we all have that are really predictable, combining both of those means that you can be so much more productive. And I think part of the reason that productivity help or courses or writing get such a bad rap is because it's become this idea that productivity equals doing more work. Mm-hmm. And of course it seems silly to think you need anything special to help you do more work. You can just do more. And of course we all could if we just forced ourselves.
Right.
But I think what's a better way to think about productivity is doing more of the right things and getting more out of your day, in the sense that you accomplish more of what's important. You don't spend so much time on busy work and you have more time to lay around and do nothing if that's right. What you want to do, or spend time on hobbies or with your family. And personally, I do heaps of that. I spend heaps of time doing nothing or being super lazy, because I focus really hard on getting the right things done rather than just I need to tick off lots of things on my list today. And it's kind of hard to be in that mindset, especially when I write about productivity so much, because I'm also reading a lot about it. And so right. I'm kind of constantly taking in this idea that productivity means doing more. Yep. The more things you tick off, the better you are. So I have to kind of remind myself quite often that that's not necessarily true. I have to constantly reevaluate what am I working on and why, and is this the most important thing I can be doing, or is this going to give me the biggest bang for buck in terms of what I could be spending my time on? So I think thinking about productivity as more of maybe efficiency doing the right things, I guess, and getting the most value out of the way you spend your time rather than just getting the most done in the same amount of time, I think is a much healthier way to look at it.
Or maybe it's a kind of question of just being more deliberate, kind of aligning the things that you actually want to do over the long term to the reality of how you spend your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of the problem with why productivity content is so low quality and there's so much of it is that so many people lap it up and don't implement it because they never really take the time to examine what they actually want. They think they want to learn a language and learn a musical instrument and cook better and go to the gym every morning and get all their work done. But if they were to really examine what the trade-offs would be of doing all those things, they'd say, well, no, I don't want to do those things. Or else they try and do them all at once and they all fail.
So I
think too many of us are not deliberate about the productivity content that we seek out and implementing it in our own lives. And so that kind of perpetuates the cycle of lots and lots of low quality productivity content all over the internet, and people keep lapping it up but not doing anything with it. And it kind of becomes this vicious cycle that makes it hard to stand out as well, and for people to think that productivity content could be high quality.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wonder whether there's almost a problem with the word by now. You know, I have friends and so on, or I have conversations with people, and it will get to the end of the day and so on, and they say, you know, oh, I wasn't productive today, or I had a really unproductive day, and this will then be an excuse almost to kind of beat themselves up about it. And it's kind of become almost this kind of social expectation that productivity equals the best life or a better way of being. But it's always framed in this narrow context of churning things out or cranking out these kind of work widgets rather than this kind of holistic sense that you were just talking about.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something that's becoming more prevalent, and it makes sense, because I think productivity in essence really means how much output are you creating, and how much output are you getting out of each of your employees, and how can you maximize that. But I don't think it's the best way to think in terms of a long-term view for you individually. I think the best thing is to think about how can you create more value and how can you make time for the things that are important to you while also getting a lot done and not burning out, which is something I've learned the hard way. Yeah. I think finding that balance can be really hard, but I think that's probably the more important thing, is to take a long-term view and see how you can fit the main priorities in your life while also having space between everything.
So are there any kind of core principles, I guess, to what you think makes someone more productive, for want of a better word? Is it all about kind of setting goals? Is it all about like little tricks like time management and Pomodoros? Is it about how you organize your task backlog? I guess I'm asking kind of what's your productivity philosophy?
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest thing for me is habits, and that makes sense because that's what my course is about. Right. But the reason the course is about that is because that's the biggest thing I've noticed in my life that makes a difference, is that habits are automatic. You don't have to think about doing them. And if you can build habits into your day so that you don't think about doing them, but you do them subconsciously, and they set you up for a more productive day, you're so much better off because you're not even trying and you're already getting more of the right things done. So I think building habits is a really powerful thing, because it also means that you have to really understand your own behavior and what triggers different good or bad habits and how they can go together and how they affect the rest of your day. So it often comes with a lot of experimentation, because we don't always know how we're going to behave on a particular day or what things affect us in which ways until we try them. So you try getting up at 5 a.m. every day for 3 days and you realize this is not for me.
Right.
But you might not know that until you try it.
Yeah.
So I think habits is the biggest thing for me, because if you focus on one, you focus on it hard enough for long enough, it'll become so automatic that you don't think about it, but it's still improving your life every day. It's putting you in a better position, assuming it's a good habit, to get more of the right things done that day. So that's really my biggest one. And then the other main thing that I think is super important is to understand yourself. And like I said, this takes a lot of experimentation, but understanding you and your own habits and your own behaviors is really important to be more productive, I think, because so many of us kind of reach for little tricks. Like you said, you know, we go for Pomodoros or we buy some $100 new app because we think that's what's going to make us productive, or we buy into some new
philosophy,
new approach D2D. Yeah. And we think this system, this is it, this will make me productive. But if you don't know what your own habits are already and what the obstacles are that are stopping you from being productive, or what productive means to you, it's not going to help. And I did this myself. I've bounced around different systems and different apps for so many years, and I still do this a little bit. But before I switch to something new, I always try to grab a pencil and paper and write down kind of what my problems are right now that are making me think I need to try something new, and what I want to get out of it, and what my expectations are before just jumping in.
And probably that kind of knowing yourself thing, I mean, that's almost like that's your life's work. I mean, because you'll change as you grow and you get older and you're doing different things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's super important to remember that, I think, because me personally, I've changed so much that I've had different needs in terms of a productivity system or tools at different times. So when I'm working full time compared to when I'm freelancing, compared to when I'm focusing on my own business, or when I'm trying to exercise more as well as get more done, my priorities are constantly changing, and what's expected of me is changing, and the way my day works, depending on whether I have meetings or I'm just working for myself and I can work whenever I want. All of those things, I think, affect what kind of system you need for yourself. And it's really important to kind of go back to basics and say, this is what I need to get done. This is what I need out of a system that will support me to get things done. And then you can go looking for what's going to fit me the best.
And I guess that's where reviews come in, where on a weekly, monthly, you know, quarterly basis, you're kind of reflecting on things rather than just kind of forging forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that self-reflection is super important, because when you're in the moment, it's so easy to say, well, I'm not going to do that today, it's not working. But when you, at the end of the week, go back and reflect on, why didn't that work after a couple of days? Why did I give up on that new thing I thought was going to be amazing? What did I think was going to happen, and what was different about it? You can really learn a lot about yourself and about your needs and kind of where you've surprised yourself or where you've gone wrong in your thinking about what you need or how you work. So I think you learn a lot from that process.
Are there any kind of systems or approaches or things, like a lot of people who listen to this podcast are writers, researchers, creative people, like people who essentially are spending most of the day with themselves, maybe sometimes just like on their own in a room. Like, are there any approaches which are better suited, or things that need to be kind of more in the forefront of their consideration?
I think it pays to, again, to know yourself, but in that specific context, it's quite easy to let your circumstances determine how you work. So it doesn't matter where you are, but in this case, which is quite similar to me, if you're working by yourself all day on a computer or with a pen and you're just in a room by yourself, it's very easy to kind of let that become your circumstance and not think about changing it. And you might not realize until you've done that for a really long time that perhaps you're much happier when you have some social interaction first thing in the morning, or you know, you're much more content and much more confident when you spend the morning thinking about your day or talking it over with someone, or maybe if you have someone else to help you set goals, maybe external goals work really well for you. I personally really like external deadlines. I'm much better at hitting them than my own. So that's something I've had to learn, where I need to reach out to someone and get them to sit down with me and help me plan out deadlines for big projects so that I can get them done quicker. Otherwise, I just kind of meander and never get things done. So I think it pays to reflect on your situation and how it could be different and try different things, rather than just letting your circumstances be what they are and thinking this is what it is, so why question? And I think it's really important to kind of question what you need most and how you can get it.
Yeah.
rather than just going with what your circumstances are.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to kind of switch tracks to, I guess, kind of the Hello Code and your kind of biggest product Exist, which is kind of all about knowing yourself to some extent, or to a large extent. You know, just from my own experience, or for listeners who don't know, it's basically a kind of service which allows you to gather together all of the kind of disparate bits of data and things which are going on in your life and tells you interesting things about that data and presents it to you in a way that you can actually use rather than just kind of, you know, your weekly step count or whatever. It kind of brings all of these things together. So yeah, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the genesis of Hello Code, Exist, and so on, and kind of what the problem is that you were trying to solve with the service.
Yeah, definitely. So as I said, we started this probably about 3 years ago or so, and it's definitely changed a lot since then. But initially it started because I was using an app on my phone that was tracking steps. That was kind of becoming a little bit more common. People were a bit curious about it, at least within the tech world. People were starting to buy Fitbits a little bit more and, yeah, and track their steps. And I thought, this is interesting. I wonder how much I walk. And so I started tracking it, and I went overseas to Europe and I tracked it there a little bit. And at first I thought, this is so cool. I've got to make sure my phone's always in my pocket so I can see how many steps I get. And a couple of weeks in, I thought, this is such a waste of time. I can't be bothered. I'm not getting anything out of it. And even though it gave me the standard 10,000 steps a day goal, yep, I just got so over that number. I didn't really care enough to get up and walk more. It wasn't motivating. And because this was starting to become a bit more common, we did a bit of research and kind of looked into, is this common? It seemed like for the people who were picking up Fitbits or trying these apps, it was becoming a bit more common to try it, but then to kind of get sick of it and get number fatigue, I guess, where the number just wasn't motivating after a little while and people would just give up on the Fitbit or stop paying attention to the app, which is what had happened to me. And we started to think, well, how can we make this more of a long-term thing that is useful, and how can we turn it from a number into something that helps you understand why you should walk more, or how you can build a habit of walking more, or, you know, how you can change your behavior, or how you can understand why you're not walking and those kind of things, and what affects when you walk and when you don't. So basically that's where the idea came from. We just wanted to take all this data that people are tracking about themselves anyway and figure out what it can tell us that's actually useful or interesting that we can kind of take away from it beyond the number. So now we've kind of branched out beyond Fitbit. We have a few different fitness trackers, but we also have some productivity services in there, and we have the weather, and we have some social media in there and music. So there's quite a lot of data that you can add depending on which services you already use. And the idea is that you would just keep on using those services or the hardware or whatever you've got as you had before. But once you've connected it to Exist, Exist just quietly collects all the data for you, does the analysis for you, and then spits out whatever interesting things it finds that you can then act on or use to understand your own behavior better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've there have been kind of numerous times where there kind of been like a really interesting correlation from my own life, which has come out. I think the most recent one was I discovered that when I sleep less, I have more perfect days, which I think is listed as a rare one. Things which you know, unless you, it's possible to do all of these kind of calculations like in an Excel spreadsheet or with statistical software and all of this, but like really people don't have, people aren't doing this. Certainly the kind of vast majority of people, and, you know, it requires like a certain technical, skill set, and just as a kind of ongoing thing, like Exist does kind of all of the hard work for you. But I was wondering if, are there any other kind of user stories which comes to mind where people have found something Exist really useful in a particular way? Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing we've found so far, because we didn't really aim this at a particular type of person beyond someone who likes to track lots of data. So at first we thought, well, that's obviously going to be someone with a Fitbit or a Jawbone app. They're probably into fitness.
Yep.
And then we've expanded out a bit more into productivity and that kind of thing. But one of the surprising trends we've noticed is that quite a few people have been using it who have issues with mental illness. So we've had quite a few different emails from users who kind of say, this is really useful for tracking triggers,
yep,
that kind of put me in a bad mood or kind of tip off my depression, or I've got bipolar disorder and I like tracking what happens each day so I can see where the correlations are in what happens to me and how I feel. And that's definitely something we hadn't considered. I mean, it was fairly early on that we added mood tracking, which is one of the only things you can track in Exist. Mainly we bring in data from outside, but we do have mood tracking where every night you get an email or a notification in our mobile apps, and you can write a note about what happened that day, and you rate your day from 1 to 5 about how good it was. And so we have the mood tracking, but we never really thought of it in terms of something more serious like mental illness. But we've definitely had quite a few people say, this is really good for that. I get to track kind of what tipped me off or what happened on good days, and I can keep an eye on different things that might trigger me or those kind of things. So that's really fascinating, because it's definitely something that surprised us, but it's really cool to know that we're helping people in that way.
Yeah. How do you use it in your own life?
So I build the iOS app. That's my part of the development. Mm-hmm. So I obviously use that every day, and I have an Apple Watch, which I love. So I love using that to track my steps. And that's something that I'm really excited to find more time to get more of HealthKit data in there, so I can track things like sleep with my watch and all kinds of things, mm-hmm. and get more of that in there. So I definitely rate my day every day. I used to get a bit tired with rating my mood every night. I don't find it that fun to actually do the rating.
Right.
But we added something not that long ago, maybe a year ago now. We added this thing where when you use mood by email, or if you look on the website on the mood tab, you'll see what your mood rating was for a year ago on the same day.
Yeah.
And I find that super cool. And so once we added that, I realized I had all these gaps where I'd been too bored to bother doing my mood note. And so now I do it religiously every night, even if I can't really be bothered. I write something about what happened, and I rate my day. And I find it really cool to see every day what happened this time last year. Where was I working? What was I working on? How did I feel? Did I go to an event? That stuff is really cool.
You also get a little correlation, right, as well.
Yeah. So if you look on the website, you'll see different correlations that usually the strongest ones are there with your mood, what it correlates with and that kind of thing. So I think that's really fun. And I also like every now and then, maybe once every couple of weeks, I'll go and have a look at my correlations. And it's always most exciting when we've added some new data. So recently we had GitHub commits and Todoist tasks completed. So they've been in there for long enough now that we've got enough data to show correlations. And I find that really fun. It's good to go and see what's making me more productive and what's not, and then to kind of look at them again in a few weeks and see if they're changing or not. So we just added food tracking, and my correlations are very weak because I don't have enough data yet. Sure, but I find them really interesting anyway, so I'm looking forward to those getting a bit stronger, so I can see, you know, how does eating sugar affect me, or how does having caffeine affect my productivity or my sleep or things like that.
You and your partner Josh are somewhat unique. I don't know that many businesses that do it in terms of kind of essentially putting your kind of statistics and kind of progress in terms of your business goals, like online and open, in a very kind of public way. What was kind of behind that decision?
Yeah, so that was something we did from very early on. And I think that it was definitely something that came, at least partly, came out of my working at Buffer. So we started Hello Code when I was working at Buffer, and Buffer's obviously well known for being super transparent about everything. And so I was kind of surrounded by that culture all the time, and seeing a lot of the benefits of being transparent and kind of how well it had done for them in terms of promoting Buffer, but also just how it affected the day-to-day culture of the company. And we both agreed that we really liked that. We liked being transparent, and we liked that when you're super transparent, you can help other people by sharing the lessons that you've learned and what's worked and what hasn't. And we certainly appreciate companies like Buffer and other companies that are further ahead than us, who've shared what they've learned and who've been really transparent about what works and what doesn't and how they run their business, because it's definitely helped us to learn and make decisions about our own business. So that's certainly something that we wanted to do from the beginning. And we're a little bit lax, but we try to do a report on our blog every month, a business report, which is basically just a write-up of an internal report that I do with a bunch of numbers of like traffic to the different websites and traffic to our blog and that kind of thing. Includes our income as well, and also kind of what we've made progress on. And I think that that's certainly something that we've had lots of people mention to us and say, it's really cool that you do this. I really like reading these. I've learned a lot. Thanks for being transparent. And we also have a podcast where we just talk about what it's like to run our business and different kind of struggles we've had or big decisions we've had to make where we've struggled over which way we should go. And people have definitely said to us about that, that they really appreciate that and they like seeing what it's like behind the scenes.
Yep.
So I think that that's really helped us kind of build a bit of an audience maybe around our business rather than exist itself and just kind of being more human and personable, I guess. People kind of know our faces. They see our faces and our names everywhere. There's no question about, is there a big company behind this product? It's just us. We say that it's just us. We say that we're from Melbourne. So I think that that's kind of helped us to build a bit of a connection with our users and with people that know us. And so that's something that we'll keep doing into the future, definitely.
What determines whether you kind of start working on a new project? Because I mean there are at least two other kind of smaller parts of Hello Code. You have Little Logs, which is kind of a community of kind of productivity microblogging almost, and you have Larder, which is this kind of bookmarking tool for coders almost. Are you just scratching kind of personal itches and it's just something you want to build for yourself, or
they were definitely both personal itches. I think actually in both cases they may have been ideas I had that I talked Josh into building for me, but we definitely have lots of ideas, and I think our long-term plan for Hello Code would be to, or our goal I guess where we want to get to is for Hello Code to be kind of an umbrella that lets us experiment a lot within that and try different things and explore different kind of personal itches and different ideas that we have, and just kind of have this umbrella over it all where we can try things and shut them down or push them if they go well and that kind of thing. So we've started doing that a little bit already. We definitely don't have the resources in terms of money and time to do a lot of them, and so at the moment we're kind of, Larder is a paid product as well as Exist, so those are the two that we spend the most time on. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a balancing act, and we have other ideas waiting in the wings that we have to put off for now because we just don't have the time and the resources to work on too many things at once. But Little Logs is something that we don't put heaps of time into right now because it's just free and it's a little side project, but it's something that we both use every day. And the same with Larder. I use Larder constantly for my work. So they're definitely things that we built to fulfill needs that we had. And I think that makes it a lot easier to work on them constantly because we always feel like this is good. More people should hear about it. It should get better. There are things we want to do with it because we use it and we like it.
Yeah. So you're a kind of between the worlds of kind of freelancer and kind of founder and director of Hello Code and so on, and I'm kind of interested in kind of getting into a little bit about kind of that freelance mindset or life, I guess, because it's increasingly common for people to have to kind of. People are just being kind of essentially thrown into that world because, well, the nature of employment and so on is shifting, at least in kind of the Western world. And I guess the first thing I wanted to kind of talk about is this idea of kind of learning and retraining. I mean, people often talk about freelancers essentially is having to be eternal students, and I'm interested in kind of what the role of learning new things and retraining has played in your own work as a freelancer.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually feel like in a lot of ways I do less learning and retraining as a freelancer than I did as an employee. Mm-hmm. I was pretty lucky in particular at Buffer. Buffer's a really supportive place for employees, and so there was a lot of support for wanting to spend some time branching out or learning from other people within the team or taking training courses and that kind of thing. And whereas I think with anything in freelancing, it's really all up to you. You're running the show, and that's good and bad.
Yep.
And so I think it takes a lot more work as a freelancer to set aside time and money if necessary to do courses or go to conferences or just learn new skills and kind of upskill or move sideways and that kind of thing. So it's something I'm doing a bit more of now, but I've really had to kind of really consciously make that something I want to do and set aside the time for it. And I think that I probably haven't improved my skills that much in the past couple of years. It's been quite small improvements, I think. And part of that is, as a writer, you're constantly reading, you're constantly reevaluating your old work. And so I'm always getting better. But in terms of really specifically retraining, it's only something that I've really recently started to do. And I think that's just because it takes so much more conscious effort as a freelancer to go out and do that.
Yeah. Are there any tips or workflows or things that you feel have really benefited you as a freelancer? It can even be just as small as, you know, particular ways that you found really good for claiming overdue payments, which I know is a really big problem for in the kind of freelance world.
I think the main things for me have been making repetitive tasks a bit more automated, I guess, or kind of less time intensive. So I recently wrote a blog post about my entire process as a freelancer, how I choose clients and how I work on the actual content and how I discuss payment and all that stuff. And apart from my fees, everything else is in there.
Yep.
So people only need to contact me if they're actually interested in going forward and want to talk about fees and what the next step would be. Anyone who's just kind of curious about how I work can just read that and kind of not contact me. And I can also point people to that if they haven't seen it, and it kind of saves me a lot of effort because I would have like constant back and forth about the same things over and over with potential new clients. And then sometimes they wouldn't become a client and it would feel like that all that effort and time was wasted. Yeah. And I really hate email. So anything that can cut down email for me is a good thing. And I just wrote that because I felt like I'm repeating myself a lot. This is something I might write about and people might find it useful, but so far I've found it more useful than I expected. And I think anything you can do that stops you having to repeat the same stuff over and over, as any developer would probably agree with, is a really good thing, because you end up just wasting so much time and so much energy on doing busy work. And I, as a freelancer, that just drives me crazy, but it's also so necessary. So anything I can cut down there is always a good thing.
You said just a few seconds ago that, you know, you haven't really focused on developing your skills and so on in the past couple of years. But I mean, one possible exception, I don't know whether this is more recent or something, but is coding, which you've written about extensively on your website. You kind of came not from nothing, but, you know, pretty much from a kind of beginner's perspective. It's not like you studied coding at university or at college or something like that. Could you talk a little bit about your kind of journey in that?
Yeah, that's good to mention, because actually that is a completely different skill set. I don't know how much that helps my writing, but it's definitely a cool skill set to have, and I've done a lot of work with it. So yeah, it's very, very different kind of branch of work, and I've probably been learning that for 2 or 3, maybe 3 years now, two or three years. So we started Hello Code. And I didn't know how to do any kind of development at all. So I dabbled a tiny bit with a little bit of HTML as a teenager, and that was it. Yep. So I didn't really have any knowledge of actual programming. And I don't know that we had any particular plans for me to ever learn, apart from I was curious and I thought that could be cool to learn.
Right.
And because I was curious about it, and I was working in the tech world, obviously, even though I was doing marketing, so I was surrounded by developers and working on software businesses. So I tried to learn Python and I tried to learn Ruby. Mm-hmm. And both times I kind of took some free online courses and read some books about it. And I kind of figured out the fundamentals, but they I never really understood kind of where to go from there. So I remember when I was learning Ruby and I kind of went through this full course that taught me all these fundamentals, and I got to the end and that was it. And I didn't know how to start a new project, how to build anything. So I didn't really understand. I kind of felt like I'm not getting this. I kind of gave up for a while. And then I've been a big fan of iOS for a long time, and I really like native apps for some reason. They just do it for me. So I thought, I'm going to try iOS. People say it's hard, but I don't care. I don't know anything. So I'm going to try. And so I started off with Treehouse, which is mainly video-based learning. Mm-hmm. So you kind of watch a video, and then sometimes they'll have kind of in the browser exercises. But one of the good things about that was, and this is probably just an iOS thing, is that because you're doing native apps and it's not something on the web where you can type into the browser and make things happen, mm-hmm. to make anything happen, you really have to open Xcode and you have to create a new project and you have to, you have to do stuff that will run. And because of that, I kind of saw these results straight away. And even though I was only typing one or two lines, I was making things happen rather than just typing stuff into the browser and getting a yes or a no of whether it was true. And being able to put that on my own phone and see that this is a thing that has one button, but I built it, was really cool. It was kind of that, that good feeling that I needed to keep me going. And so I've stuck with iOS ever since. I've stuck with the programming. I got a couple of books. Big Nerd Ranch books are, I talked about a lot because they're quite good. So I got those, and that helped me learn some more fundamentals. One of the problems with Treehouse is that each of the little courses along the track of learning iOS is taught by a different teacher, and they just teach in their own style. Yep. There's no kind of overall criteria about how to teach. And so you kind of learn how to do something one way and you have no idea that there are other ways or why you're doing it this way.
Yep.
And then a little bit later you'll learn how to do it a different way and you don't really understand why. And so that was a bit confusing. So going back to some basics with books was really helpful in terms of understanding this is the most basic way to do it, and here's another way to do it, and here's another way, and then you can kind of decide for yourself. So it's definitely been weird, I think, teaching myself with books and courses rather than kind of learning from a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really excited about how far I've come, and it feels really good on those few days when I do stuff and it works and it turns out the way I wanted. It's a really cool feeling. It makes me want to do it heaps more. So I'm really glad that I put in all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I've just recently, or kind of 3 or 4 months ago, started down a, not exactly the same journey, but like down the going from zero to, well, a little bit more in coding, and you're always the kind of the model I have in mind when I think of, you know, someone who's figured things out. Because quite often in these kind of courses and forums and online, people will say, oh, so-and-so language is very easy to pick up. Or, you know, I just went through the course in a few months and actually it wasn't that easy. But then it turns out that these people, you know, they've been, coding websites for, you know, the past 10 years, or they've been developing in another language. I find it very rare to find examples of people who really went from nothing rather than just 10 years in a different language, which is a completely different thing. Yeah, I've really appreciated the kind of the blogs and your kind of transparency in your own journey on that, as someone who's kind of coming from that kind of zero level as well.
Well, that's nice to hear, because it's definitely intimidating, I think, for someone who's a complete beginner. Like you said, there are so many people who act like they're beginners, but they're really only beginners in that specific area, and they actually bring quite a lot of previous knowledge, and so. Yeah, I think it's very intimidating to kind of ask questions or to share what you've learned when you still feel like a beginner, which I do every day. So I've kind of had to push through that and share a lot of what I've learned anyway, in the hopes that maybe it'll help people and maybe it'll help me learn more. But it's tough, because it feels a bit like imposter syndrome, I guess. Yeah, I feel a bit like, oh, I shouldn't share this. I might be doing it wrong, even though it works. So it's nice to know that maybe it's helped a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, coding is often talked about as this kind of generic skill that, in a kind of blanket way, everyone is told, you know, everyone needs to learn how to code. You know, particularly in the US, I think there's this, you know, just teach everyone to code and all of the world's problems will be solved. It's a recommendation which is kind of doled out often, I think, without thinking things through properly. I mean, I know there is a really big demand for certainly certain types of coders, and possibly that will go up, although I guess there's a question mark over that. But would you recommend kind of it as a skill, let's say, if you're starting out, as something just generically useful that will be, you know, will have kind of application in all sorts of different ways, regardless of whether you're, you know, a specifically a writer or a researcher or so on?
I would probably recommend HTML, learning HTML, maybe CSS as well, because I think so many of us interact with the web on a daily basis, and it's useful to know things like how to inspect the website that you're looking at and figure out what's gone wrong or how they're doing something. Or if you're a blogger and you're interacting with something like WordPress, it's quite handy to know how to use HTML to get exactly what you want if the buttons aren't available for what you want, and kind of not relying on someone else having provided a button for you to do what you want. So I think that's a really useful skill to know, is just to be able to understand what's happening in terms of the web, because we interact with it so much. Mm-hmm. But in terms of things like the kind of programming that, you know, some people wouldn't call that programming. So the other kind of programming, I guess, where you would make kind of apps and native apps and that kind of thing. I would not recommend that to everyone, especially not, do not try and learn it yourself unless you really want to build things, I think, because just trying to learn Python and Ruby because I thought it would be interesting was so frustrating, and I got very little out of it. Yep. Whereas now I feel like I have these projects on the go and I'm working on them all the time, and when I'm learning, it's still really hard and it's really frustrating, but it's valuable, and I can see why it's useful to push through even when it's hard. And I have kind of outcomes that I'm working towards because I'm trying to improve these apps or I'm building new apps. But if you're doing it just for fun, I think certainly don't try to teach yourself, because that's so hard in the first place. And I don't know that I would recommend it. I think there are probably plenty of other skills that are more broadly applicable than programming, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, I think I just kept on, like, on an almost kind of bi-monthly basis, I kept on coming across things that I wanted to have, like a little web app or a little thing that I wanted to make, but I didn't have the skills to do it. And obviously you can't just like pay, I mean, obviously you can pay money to get people to do this for you, but that ends up being, that's not really a possibility. And, you know, I kind of blindly figured that, I can probably figure this out. It's going to be a few months before I'm probably at that point. But yeah, like, I think for people who do have like little side projects and things that they want to build, then it takes kind of a few months, but it's possible to start building these kind of little small things that help you in a kind of specific way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's super important that, but based on my own experience, I think you need to have at least one of those really, really burning on your brain that you really want to build or you wish existed to help you push through the really tough times, because you have to start right at the beginning. If you're a beginner and you don't know anything, there's so much kind of basics of the logic and how code works. Yep. It can take a really long time before you can learn even to make something simple. And if you have a complicated idea in your head, you'll quickly realize how long it's going to take you before you know how to do all the stuff that requires.
Yep.
But if you really have that kind of burning on your brain and you're always thinking, oh, I wish I could build this, I think that's really important to help you get through how tough it is to learn.
Yeah. Just to switch kind of offline, I guess, you have often written about notebooks and pen and paper, and you've been doing a really really interesting series of kind of posts and screenshots and so on from your own notebooks, using the kind of sketch notes philosophy or kind of method. Could you talk a little bit about the importance of pen and paper in your own work?
Yeah, so this is kind of something that I've always been into, and I know that some people just aren't interested in pen and paper that much, and it's not the kind of thing where I would say everyone should use pen and paper and you're missing out. I think it's much more important to use what works for you and what you enjoy. So for me, I really enjoy writing with pen and paper, and for a long time it was kind of something where I couldn't really fit it into my workflow, and I just felt like I kept coming back to digital task managers because I thought that was the best way to manage everything. But I always had a notebook and pen beside me, and I would write the occasional note in it and kind of think, I wish I had more need for this. Yeah. And then so it was much more recently, like in the last 6 to 12 months, I think, that I've kind of picked up paper again and made it a much bigger part of how I stay organized. And it's kind of a relief because it's something that I've always enjoyed and just not being able to fit in into my workflow properly. So partly that was coming across the bullet journal method. I'd come across it before and kind of thought, oh, this isn't for me. And it's becoming really, really popular at the moment. So it's kind of everywhere. And I kept running into it and I thought, oh, I'll have another look. Yeah, maybe that could work for me. And then I came across another method that's kind of a similar thing. It's a way for setting up your notebook to manage your tasks and what you have to do every day and kind of ongoing lists of ideas and that kind of thing. And I thought, this is a really cool method. I like this. And I started playing with those. And then I came up with kind of a medium between the two that fit me better. Mm-hmm. And immediately I started to see that I was getting a lot more done.
Yeah.
I was feeling a lot more clear, and I felt like I was more confident about what I had to do. And before, I was a bit more vague about things, and that made me feel stressed because I didn't really know what I didn't feel like I knew everything I had to get done. I thought things are going to fall through the cracks, and I hate that feeling. And so I was starting to feel like, okay, I can sit down, I can concentrate on this task and get it done because I don't have this constant worry about what's on my plate that I don't know. So I felt like this is great. This is working out well for me. And I've kind of expanded out from there. And now I'm doing a bit more of kind of traditional planning with like a monthly calendar and a weekly notebook and that kind of thing. But I'm still feeling like the process of writing things down really makes me remember them a lot better. So I'll usually write down each week, I'll write down all my appointments, and taking them from my digital calendar, which I rely on to make me not forget things. But writing them down really helps me kind of cement them in my brain, I think, so I know what's coming up. Whereas I used to kind of be like, oh, just write it down and completely forget it. Mm-hmm. And while a lot of people suggest that that's a good idea and it's a good way to kind of free up your brain, it always kind of made me feel like I don't really know what I have on, and I don't really feel grounded in my own schedule. So for me, the act of kind of rewriting things works really well because it helps me make sure I always know what's going on. And then sketchnoting really came out of just having notebooks around and wanting to try using them a bit more for different things, kind of experimenting and where can they be useful and where do I need digital tools. And so one of the things I tried was as a freelancer, I'm doing kind of 2 or 3 articles a week, and usually there's quite a big research element in each of those. And so I'll spend kind of a few hours reading and researching before I write the article.
Yep.
And it's always been one of the most painful parts of my work because there's kind of only a few hours to take in kind of everything I can read about motivation and spit it all back out in a way that people can understand. It's kind of a lot to do in a very short time, and it ends up being a really strange process of lots of flicking back and forth because I can't remember what I read and it's all a bit too condensed. So I wanted to try something new. And so I tried this sketchnoting process where I basically kind of open up lots of journal articles and study papers and articles and all kinds of things. And then as I read through them, I'll take notes. And what I do is I try and draw as much as I can. I hate drawing because I'm not very good at it. And so it's one of those things where I've always kind of avoided it. But there are studies that show that drawing things helps you remember them and understand them better, as the same as handwriting. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give it a go. Right. So quite often I'll Google a picture of a bike or a phone or whatever I need to draw. Kind of cheat and copy it, but you know, it gets the pictures down and kind of trying to illustrate as much as I can the ideas that I'm researching. Mm-hmm. And so it makes the process a bit longer, but because I'm spending so much time with the information, I'm kind of drawing boxes around it and coloring it and drawing pictures. It really gets into my brain more rather than kind of a cursory read through of an article. And so when it comes time then to write my first draft, I tend to just sit down and spit it out in half an hour or an hour, and then I can go back and fact check and edit it. But the hardest part, which is getting that first draft down, is a lot faster and a lot easier because the information's properly in my brain rather than kind of, oh, I know I read something about this, but I don't know where. I have to go through 20 links to figure out which one it was. And it was just such a horrible process. And so now I feel like I'm learning more, which is great for me, but I'm also able to create more easily and kind of in a more, I get more of a flow, I guess, when I'm writing now, which is how it should be, I think.
Yeah. The other kind of skill which you, at least from what I can tell from kind of your writing online that you've kind of been working on recently, is gymnastics. And or kind of gymnastic style movement. I mean, are there any? Could you talk about any kind of crossovers in terms of like learning new skills and so on that you've found from there? And I'd recommend, you know, listeners to go and read your kind of write up at least from the kind of first week, I guess, of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a funny one, because I did write up about it. I think after my second week, I went to my second class and I got injured and I couldn't go back for a long time. And so that's when I did the write up.
Yeah.
And I've just started going back, and it's such a relief, because it was kind of months before I could go back and I really missed it. It's definitely kind of a crazy thing to do, I think. It's kind of a bunch of adults, and often there are kind of CrossFitters there or ex-gymnasts, and then there'll be two or three of us who kind of say, have you ever done anything like this?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? But it's amazing. It's kind of one of those like childhood dreams. I think most of the people like me who go kind of say, oh, I always wished I could do gymnastics, and now I'm going to finally give it a go. So it's a very, very strange environment to kind of put yourself into, a bit like programming, I guess. Programming feels like one of those worlds where everyone has an idea of what's going on.
Yep.
And I'm the only person who's so far at the bottom that I kind of feel a bit audacious walking up and saying, I'm going to give this a go.
Yep.
And it's kind of what gymnastics is like. You walk into a gym where professional athletes train and you look at the equipment and go, what am I doing here? it's definitely been really interesting to see how important it is to kind of know yourself and know your limits and to be brave at the same time, and kind of find that balance between, I'm going to give this a go, I can be brave and do it even though it's scary, and no, actually this hurts and I need to stop. And obviously I learned that by getting injured and spending months waiting for my muscles to heal. And so at the moment I kind of know that I need to take it a bit slower than other people. And because I'm in a class where most people are ahead of me, I need to be okay with sitting out for a round and taking a breather while everyone else is working. It can be really hard to kind of watch other people keep going and feel like, oh, I'm being lazy. But it's so important to have the confidence in your knowledge of yourself, I think, and what your limits are, and knowing that you're doing the right thing by taking a break. I think that really crosses over with how I think about work as well. It can be really hard to sit around for hours and hours reading different articles and writing notes on them when I'm trying to come up with new ideas to pitch to my freelance clients because I feel so lazy. I think, I can't believe I'm lying on my bed for 3 hours reading Instapaper.
Yeah.
But it's my job. It's so important to my job. And it's important, I think, to develop that confidence in what you know is important for you, for your work, or when you need to take a rest, or when you need to have a day off because you've been working too hard, and to kind of develop a bit of a hard shell in terms of not worrying about what other people think, because they probably don't care, but you know, you can't help thinking, oh, they're judging me. I think it's so important to be able to kind of shut that out a bit and just listen to yourself and understand that it's important to do what's right for you, because in the long term, you're going to get much better results by doing that.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, your experience kind of very closely mimics my own. Like about 2 years ago, I also had the idea that gymnastics would be something that I would love to be able to do. And my kind of, I had no experience of it and nothing in my childhood doing that. And I kind of hadn't been exercising for, you know, that intensely. So I kind of signed up for a club, and similar to how you kind of describe in your article, I showed up and I did some things. And I think in my third week, I also injured myself. And then I was like stuck for a few months and just kind of waiting. But then, you know, there's this kind of what I was kind of perceiving as kind of implicit peer pressure to, you know, to do the forward roll or whatever it is. And even though, you know, the people are probably just trying to be like encouraging and supportive, like rather than forcing you to do something because, you know, you must do this. Just kind of being more aware of that. That was certainly like a lesson I also kind of learned the hard way. It's kind of interesting that you had a kind of similar experience.
Yeah, definitely. It's a funny kind of environment, I think, to kind of walk in there and think, oh, I don't know what to expect, but they say it's okay for beginners to come and then kind of realize actually you're kind of out of your element compared to everyone else. But I think it's actually really good, and I think this is kind of a lesson we can take away in terms of our work and what we do day to day and even side projects and that kind of thing, is that in my last class I really noticed that it really helped me get through the times when we were doing strength work, mm-hmm. just, you know, core exercises or working on parallel bars where you need a lot of strength. And I have very, very little strength. I'm definitely out of shape compared to these other people. And that stuff is hard and it's quite embarrassing because quite often they'll kind of say, okay, you need to stop halfway through because my form is so bad. Yeah. They say, this is, you're going to hurt yourself. You've got to stop. Or, you know, I fall off the bar because I can only hold on for 30 seconds. Yeah. And so it's quite hard to be able to do that in front of other people. But I think that's a lot easier because I'm better at some of the skills work. So when we do things like flipping off the trampoline, I'm a lot better at that than some of the other beginners. And I kind of get a lot of confidence out of, this is a scary thing, but I can do it. Yeah. And when I do it, I feel really good about myself. Yeah. And then I go back to something that I'm terrible at and I feel a bit better about it. So I think it's really interesting how that can balance, because I've always been really bad at being bad at things. I'm always too embarrassed or too upset that I'm not good at something straight away that I don't learn enough, I think. So I think it's good to know that if you can find things you're good at or things that give you confidence and use those to outweigh the things where you're struggling, you might be able to stick it out long enough to learn and get better.
So we like to kind of end podcasts usually with kind of question asking our guests to suggest kind of three things that they'd like to kind of encourage people to get in contact with or pick up. Have you kind of thought about a book, a film, and some music?
Yeah. Yep.
So go. What's your book?
So the book is, it's kind of the most recent really good book I read, was called Just Mercy. It's mm-hmm. by a guy called Brian Stevenson. And I don't think it's very new, but I only came across it recently. It's written by a guy who's a lawyer in the US.
Yep.
And it's really kind of about the ways that the US justice system breaks down, or kind of the holes in the justice system where certain people fall through. And he kind of talks a lot about how, if you're not rich, or if you're a person of color, or if you're a child and you end up being tried as an adult, all these different people that kind of fall in these gaps where they get treated really poorly and they get forgotten about. And he does a lot of work kind of helping people that don't have lawyers, who are on death row, or people who were sentenced to life in prison when they were children because they were tried as adults. And it's really, really fascinating. It's really frustrating to read because it's kind of horrible, all the things that happen. And kind of so many of the people that get convicted in the face of logic, and you just can't believe the things that happen. But it's also quite fascinating in terms of how he approached different things. And he's a person of color, this particular lawyer. And so it's quite interesting how he gets treated differently in different mm-hmm. situations as well. So I found it really eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I second that. I read that, I think, when it came out. And it's kind of, it's nice to blend in the kind of commentary on the system along with his own personal experience. It's a nice blend.
Yeah, definitely.
And for a film?
So for a film, my pick would be My Scientology Movie by Louis Theroux, which I just saw. I also just saw him live on his speaking tour, and it was really fun. It was really cool to see a bit of kind of his thought process in terms of how he approaches interviews. And if you haven't seen him before, he makes a lot of documentaries. He usually picks he used to do lots of kind of weird and wacky things, like people who believe in UFOs and that kind of thing. And now he does more kind of serious medical documentaries. Yeah. And so this one was kind of about him trying to make a documentary about Scientology, and he couldn't get access. And so he kind of found a way to recreate a lot of what he's heard happens within Scientology. And then the people within Scientology start making a movie about him, and it gets all a bit meta and crazy. But it's quite good. I think everything he does is good. So I really enjoyed that.
Great. And a song, piece of music?
Yeah, so I think I couldn't pick a particular song, but I've been listening to a lot of Tim Minchin lately. He doesn't have anything new, but his latest album is Tim Minchin and the Heritage Orchestra, which was done in London, I think. And I find him so fun. I've been listening to it probably too much. I'm going to wear it out. But I love his sense of humor, and I think he's really, really clever in the way that he makes jokes. So I've been enjoying kind of re-listening to that over and over.
Great. And finally, how can people stay in touch with what you're up to online?
So you can find me on Twitter. I'm Belle B. Cooper on Twitter. And you can find me on my website at bellbethcooper.com. And you can find out about our company and all the different products just at hellocode.co.